This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. We're going to hit all the biggies today. Inflation and jobs, energy and wages. More fun than it sounds, I promise. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday today, the 10th day of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, one of the things we try to do on this program is to improve your economic situational awareness, let you know what's happening and why it matters. So we direct your attention on this Monday to Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. in the nation's capital, whence will come the March installment of the Consumer Price Index, which might more properly be described as the all-important consumer price index, inflation being what it still is in this economy. No guesses shall be made here, but we do already have a preview of prices in one very particular slice of this economy. Online shopping. Those prices are actually down. That's according to data from Adobe Analytics. And to be clear, it's not that the rate of increases in prices is slowing down, but online prices are actually down 1.7% year on year. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore, as he so often does, gets us going.
10 out of 18 online categories that Adobe looked at saw prices fall year over year, and they've been falling for months.
Electronics is a category where we saw prices pretty significantly down, about 13%.
Vivek Pandya is lead insights analyst for Adobe.
And it's really indicative of the levels of demand that consumers have for that category at the moment.
So for example, people splurged on computers for a while during the pandemic and now they're over it. PC shipments fell by 29% in the first quarter, according to IDC.
The other category that saw pretty strong down year over year change was flowers and gifts. These, again, are categories that are not quite essential in an environment like this.
An environment where some of the most stubborn inflation is in the most essential things, food and shelter. If you have to pick between sending flowers and paying for actual groceries, guess which one's going to win out. Another reason online prices have fallen is that these prices are mostly for goods as opposed to services. Rick Reeder is with BlackRock.
Goods prices tend to be commodity, supply chain oriented.
Commodities go up and down. Supply chains get clogged and unclogged. Prices rise and fall. But offline, the economy has moved to services. Think airfare, restaurants, where prices have not come down. Marcus Brunnermeier is professor of economics at Princeton.
For services, that's much less likely. And it's particularly less likely when the wages are going up.
Wages are a big part of the cost of services, and they rarely go down. So services prices are harder to bring down, too. But wages aren't rising as fast as they were last year. Again, Rick Reeder with BlackRock.
You still have wages running year on year at a little over 4%, but that's down from almost 6%. So if wages come down from those elevated levels, then service inflation tends to come down.
Reeder says between goods inflation and services inflation, we might get down to 4% overall inflation by the end of the year. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
So speaking of that, here's a little inflation tidbit from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York out this morning. Consumer expectations of inflation yet to come. Their March survey shows we're expecting inflation a year from now to be 4.7%. Better than where we are now, yes, but still more than double the 2% the Fed says it wants. Inflation expectations matter because what we're thinking inflation's going to be can actually help drive inflation higher. On Wall Street today, no inflation at all, mostly unchanged were the three major indices. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. For those who were around on Friday for the March jobs report, among the headlines you might remember was the continuing recovery in leisure and hospitality jobs, bars and restaurants specifically, 50,000 new positions last month. They are among the fastest growing businesses in this economy, as it happens, and in point of fact, they've recovered almost all of the jobs they lost in the worst of the pandemic. And you can see it, too, in a lot of downtowns, and specifically in Boston's Central Business District, which, as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, is experiencing something of a restaurant recovery.
So the burger comes with fries and two side orders, right?
Lunchtime at High Street Place Food Hall in downtown Boston is often busy these days.
It's a little bit hard to find a seat sometimes.
Lauren Johnson manages the food hall, an airy glass atrium with three bars and 16 different restaurants.
We have everything from pizza to sushi. We have smoothies, lobster rolls, and breakfast sandwiches.
High Street Place was supposed to open in late March 2020. Everything was pretty much ready to go. But then, about 2 weeks before...
We were looking at the big video wall behind me, and the NBA canceled their season. So... at that point, we decided to delay a little bit, which we thought would be, you know, a couple weeks, 3 weeks.
It was 2 years. When the food hall did finally open last spring, it was to a very different downtown, one with fewer office workers. So Johnson says they've tried to make it more than just a place to come grab breakfast or lunch.
So we have live music Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. We have our entertainment license, so there'll be some dancing in here soon.
More places like this to eat, drink, and socialize are popping up in this part of the city.
We have more bars and restaurants in downtown Boston now today than we did before the pandemic, probably 10% more.
I met Michael Nichols with the Downtown Boston Business Improvement District at the food hall. He says that's what people seem to be looking for in this area now, more so than the retail businesses that used to dominate.
For the last several generations in this area of Boston, our services, our retail offerings have been responding to the needs of the office worker. And so we've had tailors and shoe shine and clothing and fast casual lunchtime options.
But now many office workers are only coming in a few days a week, if at all. And they seem to be doing a lot of errands and shopping closer to home.
Whereas when you're downtown, you still need to eat. And you still, actually, I think we're seeing coming out of COVID, want to gather with people.
That's one reason he thinks more restaurants and bars are popping up and doing well downtown now, while retail is still suffering. Another is that while office workers have been slower to return, hungry college students and tourists are back in a big way. Just a 5-10 minute walk from the office-centric financial district is the more shopping-centric neighborhood of Downtown Crossing. Nichols says there are probably twice as many empty storefronts here now than there were before the pandemic.
So you will start to see the vacancies down Washington Street. This is our traditional retail hub for downtown. And so, you know, in this area, it could be one out of every 5 storefronts, maybe.
He points out one vacant storefront that used to be a Barnes & Noble, and another right by it that was a Forever 21.
We're actually coming up on what has emerged as Restaurant Row in Downtown Crossing. And so on a street, Temple Place, where we had just probably 3 or 4 bars and restaurants before the pandemic, we're up to 10 now.
There's a new brew pub, a breakfast place, and a cocktail lounge called the Wig Shop, which Bob Akbina just opened in September.
This is Sam. Sam, this is Babak.
Hi, Sam.
Bina also owns the two restaurants right next door, one casual, one upscale, and he'd been wanting to get his hands on the Wig Shop for years. And even though there is still so much uncertainty, Bina says by early 2022, he felt like they had survived the worst of it.
We luckily hadn't lost our home. We didn't lose our businesses. We just had to dig deeper than ever before, and there is a euphoria with that.
It also felt like Boston as a city was finally starting to emerge from the pandemic, and like it might be the right time to take a risk on finally opening that new place.
I think that oftentimes people are looking for the good times to do things, but sometimes being able to buy in the low market is a smart way of doing it.
And he sees a lot of other restaurant owners in Boston who also made it through doing the same thing, expanding and betting on the city's recovery. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
The challenges that on-demand delivery and rideshare drivers have in making a decent wage are not new. Lousy tips, often ungenerous base pay, that much most of us have heard, right? But there's a way in which this is an asymmetric information problem. The drivers and delivery people are driving and delivering while the companies are tracking their every ride and delivery. That fundamentally is a data issue, and it leads to what Vina Dubal at the University of California College of Law calls algorithmic wage discrimination. Question number one, then, when we talked, was, of course, what exactly does that mean?
What algorithmic wage discrimination does is use data that firms have on workers, on their individual behavior, on their location. They use that data to determine how much they're going to pay workers. And so you and I might be doing the exact same type of work, the exact same way, and at the exact same time, but we get vastly different wages from our employer, from the firm, based on what the firm knows about us.
Explain to me how it works in real life then. Give me an Uber driver, right? Because the company obviously has oodles of data, not just on customers, but on the drivers.
That's exactly right. So here's an example of someone from my research who I call Diego. So Diego was working in downtown Los Angeles during a really busy time period, and he was very close to getting a bonus. And that bonus was going to increase his hourly wage. And he just wasn't getting a ride. And he said that he felt that the reason that he wasn't getting a ride was because Uber knew that he was so close to his bonus, and so therefore was sort of trying to keep him in the pool of drivers available. And what that did was make him work longer for less. So when he calculated his hourly wage, it was far lower than someone who, say, was not as close to achieving their bonus.
Many questions. The first two of which are, what does Uber have to say about this? And is this legal?
Yeah, those are great questions. So Uber embraces this. This is sort of their brave new world of work. They call it dynamic pricing. They say that this is sort of how they are able to control drivers when they can't, because the drivers they consider to be independent contractors. It is legal to do this. It might violate the two existing systems of wage laws that we have, minimum wage and overtime laws, which say that workers are supposed to get a specific amount per hour. But, you know, Uber claims that these workers are independent business people, and so minimum wage laws don't apply to them. If they were considered employees, this would likely be illegal, but they're not. And so it's sort of just not protected.
We should say here that the situation with contractor versus employer is very much up for debate and being discussed heatedly in many states. But let me go on with this. So a couple of things. Taking the flip side of the coin here for a minute, is it possible that employment law in this country is just old and has not caught up with the new realities of what companies know about how people are doing the work?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that employment law in this country has developed according to individual needs. So minimum wage laws so that you can have work and survive. Unemployment insurance, so if you're laid off or deactivated, you can have something to help you as you look for other work. Workers' compensation, if you're injured while you're driving, you have some coverage. All of these laws were developed to support humans, to support people in making a living as they labor for firms, and those basic human needs haven't changed. So my answer would be no, that employment laws are not outdated, but that the rate of change in how firms have been able to avoid employment laws, primarily as a result, I think, of technological shifts, has led to a situation in which companies are able to evade enforcement.
Vinu Dubal is a professor of law at the University of California College of Law in San Francisco. A paper on this forthcoming in the Columbia Law Review. Professor, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up.
I couldn't even get into my dadgum doctor's office.
That ain't good. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 101 today, 0.3%, finished at 33,586. The NASDAQ down 3 points. We'll call that flat, 12,084. The S&P 500 up 4 points, about 0.1%, 41.9. Sabri was talking earlier about the price of goods online, so let's check the numbers of some online retailers, shall we? First up, of course, Amazon, which grew a 0.1% today. Online pet supply store Chewy was flat. Craft and handmade goods marketplace Etsy is down 1%. Furniture and decor retailer Wayfair put up 5% today. As he said in that piece, people are buying fewer computers these days. Shipments of PCs down 29%. Apple shipments down by a whopping 44.0%. Apple shares down 1.6%. Today, bonds down. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 3.42%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. One more observation about that jobs report all y'all got on Friday, and then we're going to leave it alone. The labor market in this economy seems, emphasis there on seems, to be cooling after a good couple of years of being really, really tight. And one of the reasons for the labor shortage, again, emphasis on one of, was fewer immigrants coming to this country as the pandemic took hold. That matters because immigrants typically account for a big chunk of labor force growth. But over the past year or so, immigration numbers have started ramping back up. So Marketplace's Savannah Marr has today's installment of Immigration is a Labor Story, people.
A few moments during the pandemic have made the link between immigration and the labor market crystal clear, says Danny Bahar with the Brookings Institution. The first came early on, when lots of frontline jobs were held by immigrant workers.
I'm talking here about daycare workers and nurses and doctors, but also people, you know, packing groceries and making deliveries.
When the economy started to open back up, he says there was a huge demand for workers in industries that typically rely on immigration, like service, hospitality, and childcare. But the pool of immigrant workers was suddenly a lot smaller. Julia Gallott with the Migration Policy Institute says the number of legal immigrants coming to the U.S. was cut in half between 2019 and 2020.
The sharp drop in immigration was a big contributing factor to the tight labor markets we saw.
And Giovanni Perry at the University of California, Davis, says that gap in the labor market led to wage growth, which contributed to another of the pandemic's big economic stories, inflation.
But the recent rebound of immigrants started helping on that front.
Since border restrictions started to ease, Perry says U.S. immigration officials have been playing catch up with a backlog of visa applications, and they're making some headway.
a labor market where jobs can be filled more easily because of the inflow of immigrants will generate less inflationary pressures.
Perry says immigrant workers could address longer-term shortfalls too, but that would require immigration policy to be more closely tied to the needs of the labor market. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
The global energy story since Russia invaded Ukraine more than a year ago now has been, even more than oil, natural gas, specifically nat gas in Europe. The thing with energy, though, is that it's a global market. And so what's been happening in Europe, the pipeline challenges, the supply shortages, and now the surpluses, that all affects the rest of the planet and most specifically emerging markets. India and Thailand, much of Latin America, they've all scrambled to handle energy crises of their own, as much of the natural gas that they'd been hoping for had been rerouted to Europe. That, as Marketplace's Lily Jamali reports, might be starting to change.
Liquefied natural gas is the super chilled stuff that can be transported by ship instead of by pipeline. Raymond James energy analyst Pavel Molchanov says Europe's willingness to pay top dollar after the invasion squeezed less wealthy nations.
Those economies simply cannot afford to pay three or four times what they normally pay for fuel.
With less natural gas, Bangladesh and Pakistan, for example, have endured blackouts and power rationing this last year. That's affected daily life and major economic sectors like the garment industry. Bangladesh, which is home to almost 170 million people, uses natural gas to generate the majority of its electricity. The country cut power on 85 out of 92 days counted by Reuters in late 2022. Now, natural gas prices are lower because Europe is buying less of it. Bogdan Propakovich at the University of Massachusetts Amherst says the weather in Europe has helped.
There were some colder days, but luckily the winter was not as bad as we were kind of anticipating.
So Bangladesh, along with Pakistan, Indonesia, and Vietnam, are buying more LNG again. But Anna Mikulska of Rice University's Baker Institute says last year's LNG shortage may have disrupted the push to replace dirtier fossil fuels like coal with natural gas.
They end up being concerned about the future of LNG, which basically will translate into their reluctance of thinking about investment in LNG.
Infrastructure investments that can add up without protecting hundreds of millions of people from more shortages and blackouts in the future. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
The Centers for Disease Control says one in four adults is living with some kind of disability. And as baby boomers get older and the full reach of COVID-related disabilities becomes more clear, that number is probably going to go up, which for people who work in the aging-in-place industry is good for business. Here's today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Dawn Mahia. I am a licensed home inspector, and I'm also a certified aging-in-place specialist. I live in and around Oklahoma City. A certified aging-in-place specialist helps people who need to have a home modified so that they can live in it more comfortably instead of going to a living facility. Entrance to the home is very, very important, especially in the older homes that have a crawl space. You're going to need a really good ramp. Some of the older homes don't have the appropriate door widths to get a wheelchair through the door. Most people have a tub in their bathroom. It's very difficult to lift somebody in and out of a tub. When I was younger, I was run over by a car, and I know exactly how it feels to be in a wheelchair, how it feels to be disabled, how it feels to, you're going up to a building. And even back then, you know, that was in the 80s, I couldn't even get into my dadgum doctor's office. So the last house that I purchased, I made sure that we widened the doors. I made sure that even though neither one of us is in a wheelchair right now, I made it so it can be wheelchair accessible. I did take out the tub. I did put in a handicapped toilet so that we can accommodate a wheelchair when or if the time does come. I purchased a really old home in 2012 and rehabbed it to be completely ADA compliant. We had to replace all the doors. We rented it out to the first client. He was in a wheelchair, and he was able to come up the ramp and through the door. And he came in with his wheelchair, and he almost did a wheelie in the middle of the room. He said, "Oh my gosh, this is exactly what I need." And the father who was taking care of his son said, "I won't have to lift my son into the tub, and that always strains my back and has always been an issue. This shower," he says, "I've never seen a shower like this before. It's beautiful." So if people are looking for a new type of job that they can do from home, basically, in other words, you don't have to go to an office every single day, but you want to be able to help people, this is a good job to do because there is a great need, and there's going to continue to be a great need for certified aging in place specialists, and not just for people 65 and older.
Dawn Mahia, certified aging in place specialist. She's in Oklahoma City. Tell us a story of your economy, would you? Whether you are aging or not. Yes, I know we all are, but anyway. Whether you're aging or not, wherever it's happening for you, marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, one more thing from that New York Fed consumer expectation survey I mentioned up at the top of the show. Not only are we thinking inflation's going to be higher, we're also pretty sure credit's going to be harder to come by. More people than ever, since the New York Fed started this survey 10 years ago, more people than ever think it is harder to get a loan now than it was 12 months ago, and that it's going to be even harder to get a loan a year from now. All right, off we go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. It's ticker symbol of the day today. MODG is the ticker. Anybody? It's a company called Topgolf Callaway Brands Corporation. Shares up 4.9%. Why, you ask? Because John Rahm won the Masters yesterday using their clubs. That's why. Buy the shares, you probably won't play like him. Our daily production, I'm not a golfer. Daily production of the team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giong, Maria Honhorst, Sarah Leeson, and Sean McHenry. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. And this is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.